Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Good morning and welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker, and we come to you this Wednesday morning and gray skies and a little bit of rain, but we've got sunshine in the studio today. So we've got a great show today with three authors that are going to be sharing a little bit about the books that they've written and kind of how they got inspired to write them. What they're all about, and learn a little bit from their experiences as professionals, executives in business, and also now as authors, kind of a business owner to a certain degree. And we certainly look forward to the show. Our first guest is Darcy Eichenberg.
Eichenberg.
That's good. Nice. I like that. So, Darcy, maybe you could give us a little bit of background on how you got to where you are now and what you're doing.
Sure. Well, thanks, John, for having me here. You know, what I do now is we all know people who work in corporate careers, and many times they might feel stuck, or they might feel like they really need some kind of a change. Yet so many times people don't make a change because they think that they have to go to the extreme. They think they have to quit everything and change everything in their life. Well, I help people change their life at work without having to change everything in their life. So I do that through leadership and workplace coaching, through the information and content on my blog at redcaperevolution.com, through my new book, Bring Your Superpowers to Work, and through a lot of speaking and workshops that I do all over the country.
Great stuff. So tell us about Red Cape. What's it all about, and how does it work?
Ah, well, remember when you were a kid and you would grab a towel or a tablecloth and you throw it around your shoulders, and suddenly you'd stand up straighter, or you felt more confident and in control? And I was working with a lot of clients in my coaching and consulting business, and just found a lot of people feeling beaten down. And this was even before the recession, you know, feeling beaten down and feeling like almost hopeless in many ways. And yet I saw there was so much talent for these people. There was so much opportunity, and our businesses need this talent so badly. And so I realized, what if we could have that red cape feeling all the time at work? And that's when I developed Red Cape Revolution as sort of a little more lighthearted way to look at career development, you know, our work inside our work, you know, what really is unique and special about us, and the ways that we can make a difference and contribute more at work, and in the end, make a bigger difference, not only for our careers, but for our company, and, you know, I believe for our communities and our world, too.
Sounds great. Who is your actual client? Are you going into corporations and saying, look, I can really make a difference in your employees' lives, and I make the difference in their life, and productivity will get better? Or do you go directly to the person and say, look, you know, I'm working directly for you?
Yeah, both. I have two lines of business. You know, one is a direct-to-consumer business, and that really is a lot of the content and tools that are on redcaperevolution.com. There's a lot of free tips and ideas. You know, I strongly believe that sharing content and ideas so that things spark, and you know, if there's something that I can write or do that, you know, helps someone change their perspective. That's going to make a difference. But I'm also hired by companies to come in to speak, to motivate, to inspire, to give some fresh ideas, and also to work with up and coming leaders, to work with high performing teams. I also do that work with companies as well.
So if I was somebody that was interested in something like that, what would be the process? Let's say I was an individual looking for a little boost and maybe some direction in terms of my career path. What, Darcy, would be the process that I would go through if I came to you?
Right. So for an individual, there are a couple different paths. I do have a group program that's called the Red Cape Club, which is basically a way to have a lower time investment, lower cost investment, and get some ongoing content, some open Q&A to be able to bring your problems to the call. But it's in a group setting, so it's not as personalized or customized. But I do individual coaching, and to get started on that, people have to apply through my website. There's a Work with Darcy tab, and they can find the information about how they'd work with me personally. And I work with people in one-time sessions, something to help them concentrate and get focused so that they can take the action, and work with people over long periods of time to help have an accountability partner and someone who can help guide them toward some bigger changes that they want to make.
Great. And you've written a book, obviously, as an author. So tell us a little bit about Bring Your Superpowers to Work.
Yeah. So Bring Your Superpowers to Work, the subtitle is Your Guide to More Clarity, Confidence, and Control. And it really came out of a lot of the things I was hearing from my client work. I have the great blessing to be able to be in rooms of talented people, speaking and coaching and teaching. And, I found that I wanted to reach more people with some of the simple, practical things that, I've worked with my clients on that sometimes are surprising as to how we can make changes without having to change everything drastically. And so I wanted to put that all down, in a book. I wanted it to be not only a piece to be able to extend these thoughts further, because I do believe that we're in a great time of workplace change right now. I believe that we need all the positive inspiration, simple, easy ideas that can move us forward, because there's too much negativity out there. So I wrote that to be able to extend it further. I also wrote it to be able to help as for my business, people understand more quickly about what I do and who I am. So it also becomes a calling card for me and some of my beliefs.
How long has the book been out?
The book came out the end of January. Oh. So we're just at the end of the first full month here on Leap Day in February.
Right. That's right. Well, congratulations
on
that.
Thank you.
Now, I know that in the book you talk about the six steps to discovering kind of your own superpowers. Maybe you could give a little bit of just a little brief snippet on that.
Sure. And one of the things that people have reacted to very positively in the book is that there are lots of small bites of information. It's not a big academic tome. I mean, the people that are, my audience are people who are very busy corporate professionals with also busy lives. And so having things people can grab, swallow, and act on, quickly have been important. So the tips that I put in there really in discovering your superpowers really revolve around finding clarity. So there are things like listening to the whispers, as I call it, of paying attention to what's not being said in your everyday life, the things that you're drawn to, but the things that are in your head, and finding some of that space to recognize those things. Things like I have a concept I call sign your own permission slip. I feel so many times that, even the smart, successful, accomplished professionals are often waiting for someone else to give them permission to do something. Well, why can't you sign your own permission slip? Why can't you say, I'm going to take that class, or I'm going to have that conversation with my manager? I don't have to wait to be invited to have that conversation with my manager. So there are simple practical tips in there. There is also a free online tool on my site, redcaperevolution.com, called the Superpower Statement Generator, which is basically an inventory that you can take of a lot of the qualities that are unique and special and remarkable about you. And so that's included in the book in print, but it's also a free tool that's on my website under a section called Free Tools and Tips that helps people discover more specific about, you know, what might be super about them.
And Darcy, you had, before you got into this business, you worked in corporate America. Mm-hmm. Some of the big names, Coke and Home Depot and some of these guys. What do you see as a difference between doing what you're doing now and transitioning into, you know, or transitioning from what you were doing in kind of corporate America?
Yeah, it's interesting. I never set out to be an entrepreneur. I was a very happy, you know, senior principal consultant at a large HR consulting firm. I was a person that I now write for. Great job, great company, great people around me, lots of good work to do. And, you know, I had started to feel that I needed to make a bigger contribution, you know, maybe bigger than my company was ready for at the time. But one of the first things that I did was I actually created a business within the business that we had at my company. I found that intersection of what I wanted to do and what was great and unique and special about me, but also what my company needed. And I feel very fortunate that I had the opportunity to try that out. And so I built an internal coaching business within my part of the business, within my business practice. And I was very well supported by some leaders and other mentors. And it gave me the confidence to say, you know, I can do this. I really want to put both of my feet into this. And that's, you know, where I went out on my own. My corporate experience has definitely been helpful to me. You know, being able to know how to interact with clients, to, you know, be professional in all ways, and to know that there are people who have problems and challenges and who need you, and to not talk yourself down that, oh, well, what do I have to offer? I think that there's a lot of challenges that we have in corporate America, but there's a lot of challenges entrepreneurs have. So we all, you know, need to understand there's no one choice for any one person. It's what's really going to be right for you.
So if you were speaking to the perfect candidate for your business, somebody that would be a great client, describe what that person would be like.
Mm-hmm. That person usually is a upper level corporate executive, and maybe they're in a service type position, marketing, communication, finance, IT, whereas they have internal clients as well as focusing on the work that happens externally. And they're spending so much time on all of the internal relationships, on all of the processes that happen, that they find they don't have time for themselves. And so and maybe they're the person who is asking themselves a question, what's next for me? Or where do I go from here? Or the bigger question, is this all there is? It's a question I hear a lot. And I think that we all ask a lot. And so that kind of person, when I work with them, we come up with a plan. You know, again, I am about action, you know, control. Clarity, confidence, and control are the three things that I'm really highly focused on. And I find they're the things that people want so much and yet don't feel that are very accessible. So we may work on maybe the clarity. They may be trying to do too much, do everything, instead of do the thing that's really special and important for them. It may be confidence. They may have all the talent in the world but not feel like they can put it out there. And it may be control. It may just be having a clear action plan of what are the next steps. I say very often, you can't jump across the creek in one jump. You've got to put your foot on one rock, and being on that one rock might lead you to the rock to your left or the rock to your right. But, you know, we walk across the creek together instead of people feeling overwhelmed that, oh my gosh, I can never jump across the creek all by myself.
What do you think the biggest challenge for people to make those steps are?
I think belief in many ways. I think sometimes the biggest challenge is in between our two ears. I think that people feels very overwhelming to create change. We are creatures of comfort, but it's the uncomfortable with where the growth comes from. Mm-hmm. I use the analogy a lot that the seed, you know, has to bust through its shell and the hard Georgia clay and, you know, to reach up to the sun. I mean, that can't be comfortable. That has to be painful if you're a seed. And the same goes for us. But I think if we're not, especially people who want to make a contribution. People are high performing. People who want a level of success on their own terms, not how the world might dictate it. And only you can say what success on your terms is. People that want that have to realize there is a state of discomfort. They're already in a state of discomfort, so why not intentionally step into it, and take the steps to, you know, to get to what the next place for them is. And so I teach, and I hold up a mirror, and I challenge, and I hold people accountable. And I'm a cheerleader. I'm a supporter. So I believe that people can do the things that they decide to do, but they have to believe it for themselves.
Got to embrace the pain, right?
Absolutely, yes. Well, or choose to think about the pain differently.
That's right.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So one of the last questions that we always like to ask is about a pearl of wisdom. If you were going to embark a pearl of wisdom on our listeners, what would it be?
I think the pearl of wisdom I find myself sharing more often is that you need to believe that the world needs you. I think we have so many problems and challenges right now, and we think they feel very overwhelming, and they don't feel like any one of us can make a difference. But when we're bringing our superpowers to work, in whatever work that is, I believe that that's taking care of something that needed to happen in the world. And it's not, you know, it's almost our obligation to be doing that, not, oh, well, I should. So if you're questioning at all why you should be listening to your whispers and moving forward in the things you want to do, to remember that the world needs you.
Perfect. Good, sage advice. So, Darcy, if somebody wants to get in contact with you, either about the book or about your business, how would they do that?
Yeah, best way is to go to redcaperevolution.com. And on there's all sorts of information. You can also sign up for our twice monthly community news. And when you do that, you can download a free chapter and first chapter audio of Bring Your Superpowers to Work. I'm also can be found on Twitter at @RedCapeRev, on LinkedIn as Darcy Eichenberg, and our Facebook page is Red Cape Revolution.
Okay. Well, Darcy, thank you much for coming in. We appreciate you taking the time.
Great. Thanks, John.
And can you hang on for a minute?
Absolutely. Love to hear the rest of these authors.
All right. Well, so our next guest and author is Jim Hudson. And Jim, welcome in.
Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be here today.
We appreciate you taking the time out. Maybe you could give us a little bit of background on your illustrious career so far.
Well, as you look at me, you know that's been a long career. So let me start with the short piece of it. A lot of people are interested where you get to based on your education, and I'm a two-time graduate at Georgia Tech. Being here in Atlanta, it's always I'm proud to talk about Georgia Tech.
So you went back for a second because you just couldn't get enough of it.
Well, that's true, and I think sometimes you go back because what you got in the beginning wasn't what you finally decided you wanted to have.
That's exactly right.
So I went back and got an MBA at Georgia Tech back in the early days when you really had to work hard for them, and well, you still really do.
Yeah,
they're a good. It's a good program there. Married, three grown children, eight grandchildren now, and been living here in Atlanta for the third time. First came here to go to Georgia Tech back in 1963.
Yep.
That's a sort of short version on me.
And business background?
Business background. I spent 36 years with AT&T. Started out in as an engineer there, and worked through my career up to executive level. And opportunity came along to do something else, and decided to move on and work for a couple other companies.
Good stuff.
But today, more free time than busy.
So, tell us about your book. How did you get the inspiration to write that, and what's the book about?
Well, the book is about planning for one's financial needs over their career or over their life. So it's a lifespan financial planning. The way I feel people should look at their financial needs is as it relates across their life and not to a particular event, because it's a process. It's not an event.
Mm-hmm.
How I came to this is quite unique. I'll try to encapsulate it rather shortly, but it had to do with my last child was leaving home. My wife and I were moving him out to Austin, Texas, where he was taking a job after graduating from Georgia Tech.
Another yellow jacket.
Exactly.
You just breed these people. They're loving you.
Well, I have to admit that I have one bulldog in the family,
oh.
So that's kind of hard to deal with,
yeah,
as you might imagine.
The black sheep, yeah. Or the red sheep, I guess, in this case.
But he was moving out to Austin, Texas. My wife and I, we had gone out to help him move out there, and And he got all settled in, and one evening he was looking at how he was going to manage his expenses, his new job, and what he was going to need. And he looks at me and says, "Dad, how much should I save?" And I told him, I said, "Son, save all you can. You'll probably never save enough." And I tell you, that response haunted me.
Yeah.
We were driving back to Atlanta, realizing our house was going to be empty, no more children at home, and be so much quieter. And it came back to me that I had missed what was probably a golden opportunity for conversation. And so I called him up. I said, "Well, I'm going to call him back up, and I'm going to tell him that I'm going to give him an answer." So I did, and that's what really led me ultimately to writing this book, because when I started working on giving him an answer, I couldn't find a book that I was looking for that was really an aid to me.
Yeah.
So I said, "Well, if I can't find a book with this, I'm going to have to come up with my own information." And so I started digging and working. And the biggest challenge I had is there wasn't really any program that helps a person effectively put the numbers together, because it is a numbers challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more I worked on this, I started writing a little program. I'd gone online to try to use some of the online tools, which I found a little bit too primitive. So
yep.
I developed a little software program. And then I got the answer together, and I realized a lot of people are going to try to answer this and won't be able to answer it, so I'll just take this and put it into a book to share with other people. Because I'm sure that I would hope a lot of parents are getting that question from their children.
So is your book focused on having that discussion with the kids, or is it more general?
It's probably a little bit more general than having the discussion, but what it does is it provides it really aids a person in answering that question, because it shows them how you answer the question and how you can get an answer to the question, because it's not an easy question to answer.
Mm-hmm.
When you're really looking at a person starting out, and they're going to spend 40, 45 years working and probably going to be retired 25, 30 years. Our lifespans could be even more than that, you know.
Right, right.
It's not unusual at all for someone to be a centenarian.
Yeah, yeah. It's getting a lot more popular for sure.
Exactly.
So, in writing the book, what did you find that was the most challenging part of going through that process?
Well, I've always enjoyed writing. I think it's one of our arts that we probably need to focus more on in our society. But so putting my thoughts down, what probably I found a challenge to me in writing this is that how we really need to focus on good language and structure, because the first time I wrote it, I just put it all together. Then I went back and started reviewing it and go like, well, this could read a lot better. So I found in writing a book that one of the challenges you have is not everything in just the content you put in it, but actually making it a good book, a good readable book.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this being a little more technical, I think offered some challenge as well. But and I think it hit upon how do you really, you know, communicate the message you're trying to share with people. You know, there are a lot of challenges in writing a book. I mean, a lot of people, I probably sit, "Oh, that must be so simple."
Yeah.
But what I found is that once you start taking your thoughts and putting them into a book form, in my case, I had to deal with illustrations. I had to deal with terms that maybe I needed to posture them so they would be more broadly understood, because sometimes we'll use terms that we think everybody understands. Particularly have to stay away from acronyms and things like that.
Sure.
You know, because there's a lot to deal with in communications depending on what the topic you're writing about.
So in your research and in kind of discovering this whole process, what were the things that you found that people really need to be focusing on in building this financial future?
Well, to me, it's about a process more than events. And the more I read other documents, I found that they tend to talk about events, not a process.
Hmm.
And when you're talking about a long time span, you really, to me, you need to, how do you get from where you are to where you want to be? What is the process to get from there?
Right.
There are a lot of events, like some people say, well, you need to put your money in a 401k. Well, that's an event, actually.
Right.
Even though you're putting it in monthly or weekly, whenever it comes out of your paycheck or however the money goes in there, if you put your money in an IRA, that's an event. But so once you take an event, then how do you connect all the events together so they become a process? And that's what I was dealing with, is is that I don't spend time talking about how much you can put in an IRA or how much you can put in your 401k. There's plenty of books and plenty of information on that. What I'm talking about is how do you go about the process of being sure that when you get to the end of your career, you're going to be comfortable, you're going to be secure, and you're going to be where you want to be. And then when you go through a process, you want to measure yourself along the way. At the end of a year, am I where I wanted to be? End of 2 years, end of 10 years, end of five, you know, the middle of your career, are you really wanted to be? So when you go through a process, it's all about not just these events, but the steps in your process and how do you measure yourself? And then if you're not where you want to be, then how do you then reestablish your path so you're going to end up where you want to be?
So let me, and I was going to talk to... Actually, I'm going to come back a little bit to Darcy on this maybe a little bit later. But when you went through this whole process of writing this book and you finished it, what was the biggest reward that you've had so far?
I would have to say it's other people finding it useful to them. In case of my book, it's not like a novel where it's just for entertainment, but there's more value there. But I found it just rewarding finishing the book. You know, once you've done something like this, it's a large undertaking. It was a year and a half. It wasn't something I sat down and wrote in a few weeks. I put a lot of time into it, working up the content, verifying it. Going out and finding people to read my book and give me feedback before it was ever published.
Right.
To edit it. Because I think that's a very important part about books is not before you publish them, be sure that they've been read by somebody, and so that the first person to read it isn't your
editor.
You
spelled this wrong, and this is not used properly, and all the grammatical things.
But I think that at the end of completing it, it was just there's a certain. It was the first book I've written. I hope it's not my last one, but maybe.
Okay,
good.
But
it's just to me, it was just a reward of having done it, found a publisher. I'm a self-publisher.
Yeah.
I don't have the name recognition for the publishers to be chasing after me.
Sure.
But, I think that's pretty much the biggest reward. Was sort of a self-fulfillment that, look, I'd done something that not a lot of people do.
How did you do the research to find the information? Because obviously it's more technically oriented. How did you do the groundwork to figure it all out?
Well, I did quite a bit of... of research in terms of content for my book, because there's today, for example, even if you go to the Fortune 500 companies, there's very few companies that offer, for example, a defined benefit pension plan, and these are our 500 largest companies in the United States. Companies like you might mention companies as big as Cisco. When I started looking at this, what is the real world out there kind of like? I needed to understand that real world and not what my perception of it was, but what is the actual real world? So I did a lot of research on, for example, what is the status today of the defined benefit pension plans? You know, how many companies offer them? What's the direction there? And, of course, for most people that are aware, fewer and fewer companies are offering that type
most
of benefit.
Most people don't even know what they are. Define what? That,
right.
What does that even mean?
But I did a lot of research in that area, did research in terms of what investment opportunities are. Obviously, a lot of them for a person starting out are fairly well-defined in terms of 401ks and IRAs. But it was probably one of the biggest pieces of putting my book together, the time I spent doing that type of research. And then, of course, one of the bigger pieces of it is the software I wrote, because at the end of the day, in this process, you can't really go through this process without a software tool to lead you through it. It is too complex. And so one thing unique about my book is it comes with a disc with a program that says, here's what you need to do, and here's your tool so that you can go do it.
And you're doing some teaching, I think, also at Tech on the same topic, aren't you?
I did some. I was invited to join in an introduction for some of the young folks coming to Georgia Tech. I think the course is GT1000. What it does, it introduces young Georgia Tech students. It's sort of an orientation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's required for all students, but it is a in college, we're always looking at how we can introduce the student to the college environment, things they'll be dealing with. And so this course covers a lot of different topics, one of them dealing with financial planning.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be honest with you, but one of the things I learned early on with young people is you never use the term budget. Budget is a turnoff. So you learn what the turn-on words are, you learn what the turn-off words are.
So budget's bad. What's a good word for the younger crowd?
Well, it's, gosh, there's lots of good words, but I know that's one you stay away from. You're too more in terms of maybe what are your needs?
Not right.
You look for more of a needs case in terms of how you structure with a budget. For some reason,
the word budget just turns them, just scares them away, right?
Yeah. But, of course, a lot of things that students have to deal with today is how they're going to pay for their education.
Sure.
You know, they're going to go get a college loan. So what I taught there is that a little bit about this financial planning concept, that it really begins right there when you're going to school. What is your financial plan? And that's what we emphasize more than budget. What is your plan?
Mm-hmm.
What is your plan for how you'll pay for your education? Are you going to get a loan? Are you going to work some? For those who are very fortunate to have parents that say, just go, don't worry, I'll pay for it,
right.
Have a good time,
right.
Best time of your life, that's obviously the best world for any student.
Sure.
But it was a plan there, a course there to help students understand what they're dealing with financially as they go through the education process and how they're going to pay for it and where they're going to end up at the end of 4 years or
right.
5 years. Or if like me, 6 years. 12 years.
Right,
finish school, is that if you have some debt, then how are you going to deal with that?
Good stuff. So, Jim, if you, in your experiences, I mean, you've been in corporate America, you've written a book, you're teaching classes to students in college, what would your pearl of wisdom be to our listeners?
Well, it's I think I would leave a pearl for those who are adults that are dealing with children. I'll leave a pearl for the children as well. Kind of two audience there. If you're a parent, I think this is a topic that you need to take up with your children as early as possible. My view is for young people that when you reach 18, you're now independent. And at that point, you need to be dealing with all the aspects of your life, and one of them is your financial plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's 18, regardless of whether you're going to college, whether you're going to go join the Marine Corps, whether you're going to get a job at the local factory. That's where it starts, because whether you go to college or not, or go to the technical school, whatever you choose for your path, that's part of the financial deal with. I propose that rather than saying, oh, well, look, I'm paying for your college. Don't worry about it until you finish school.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, I think there's what we call in the financial industry moral hazard associated with that, the more dependent you become on that type of environment.
Sure.
So for the parents of children, my pearl of words to them is work with your children. Be sure that they recognize their responsibility and their need to deal with their financial planning. And for the young person, start your plan as soon as you can, early as possible. Even if you obviously don't know exactly what they want it to be, start out with something. You always change along the way. It's not something that once you cast it, it's cast in concrete. It's something that's very flexible, very adjustable across your career.
Perfect. So if somebody, Jim, wants to get in contact with you in terms of the book or anything else, is there a good way to reach out?
Well, the easiest way to reach me is via the internet, via email. I have two emails. One of them is one directly to me, which I don't mind sharing with people. It's my initials, JC, my last name, HUDSON, @mindspring.com. Or they can reach me through my other website address. It's my same thing, jchudson@lifespanmapping.com.
Okay. Well, perfect. We appreciate you spending some time, and hopefully we'll get a chance to catch up with you in just a second to go back over some more experiences in writing that book.
Well, thank you, John.
My pleasure. So our next guest is Bill Crosley, and Bill, we appreciate you coming out.
Thank you for having me.
Maybe you could give us a little bit of background on yourself.
Well, I'm either a serial entrepreneur or a failure at retirement. Depends on your point of view there.
Yeah.
My first life was in the United States Army, 28 years. I retired, never intended to work a day in my life.
Including the military, or
no? No, after the military, the army gave me a small pension, and I thought that I took early retirement, and so I thought that would just be a fun lifestyle for my wife and me, and that lasted for about 10 days, and then I found myself running a small software development company, a startup in Munich, Germany, and I was bit by the entrepreneurial bug, and so there was a. Another retirement, startup, retirement, startup, retirement. I think I've been through about four of these now. So that's how I got here.
That's how you got to where you are now.
There you are.
And tell us about your a book, and I think they're actually books. You've got two of them out now.
Well, the second book will be out the end of March.
Hot off the press.
Well, actually, it won't be off the press. It will be ebook only.
Hot off email.
Exactly. All right. And in my last startup, we were one of the early ebook retailers, echapter1.com.
Oh, okay.
And we were moderately successful. But one of the things that we did was, as a sidelight, was that we summarized business books and we sold subscriptions to our business books. And I can share with you that there are approximately 7,200 business books published in the United States each month. And we intended to summarize only the most current, best business books. And we promised our subscribers one summary every 2 weeks, and we promised them that the summary would be 6 to 8 pages. That's 3,000 to 3,400 words. And I can tell you that we had great difficulty with that concept because we frankly, with present company accepted, of course, we frankly found it quite difficult to come up with one good current business book every 2 weeks. And I have recollections of our marketing lady hollering at me, "Bill, the summary is due out in 8 days. You have to select the book." Now, I had a fleet of great writers who were summarizing. Jim Lohr, who is the lead business writer for the New York Times, was our lead summarizer. And Jim had the ability to encapsulate a business book very quickly to the extent that on occasion he would send me just a paragraph. And I would suggest that, Jim, we need another 3,000 words to wrap around this. And he pointed out to me that, by and large, most business books can be summarized in a paragraph. And so after we closed down echapter1.com, I gave that great thought. And I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to write a book, a business book, and disguise it as a novel? And that would also give me the opportunity to show rather than tell. And writers know that, by and large, a novel should be about 80% show and 20% tell. Most business books are 100% tell.
How do you mean show and tell? How do you mean?
Through dialogue, through scenes, through character development, just show.
Gotcha.
Your reader, rather than
tell them the detail.
Yeah. Telling is easy. And telling is very economical, and it's very efficient in the use of words. But showing is more fun.
People read showing. They get tied into showing.
They do, in fact. Yeah. And so I thought it would be fun to do this, and so I did it. And it's a business book, a guide for entrepreneurs and angels and green card investors. And it's disguised as a novel with a plot that I hope is interesting, informative, entertaining. And it's set aboard magnificent sailing yachts in Sarasota, Florida. I lived in Sarasota before I came to Atlanta.
Did you really?
Yes.
I went to Eckerd College down
in... Oh, did you?
Yeah, St. Pete, Tampa.
Yeah. Oh, good school. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
And a fun school,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, right on the water.
There you are.
Four years, best 4 years. Almost five, but I made it out in four.
Well, I enjoyed... I had a sailboat down there.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed sailing there. And so I set it on, you know, you're supposed to do what you know how to do, write what you know how to write about.
Sure.
And so I sat at aboard a yacht in Sarasota, and the protagonist is an ex-Army officer in his mid-40s with no business experience.
Imagine the correlation.
And no business contacts.
Right.
more connections. He's hungry for success in the business world. I wasn't really. I had to work that in to the character to develop the plot. But he partners with an imaginative young fashion designer in her mid-20s. Now, he's in his 40s, she's in her 20s. There's some conflict here, but conflict is the essence of drama, so I thought that would work.
Is there a relationship plot that goes to the side on this? A little bit of a... Come on, you got to throw that into a good novel, don't
well,
you?
Well, you have the OSS.
I don't know what that means.
That's the obligatory sex scene.
Oh, okay, all right. And so you got
to
have that.
Oh, every novel has to have an OSS.
Did you have that in the financial planning book? Did that happen in there?
I have S-I-X in it, no S-E-X in it.
So their goal is to create a company that provides sunset cruises for young single professionals aboard magnificent yachts in the seaside cities all around the world. Miami, the Caymans, New York. Golly, we've got them in San Diego, San Francisco, Nice, Marbella.
Sounds like you're selling a business. Sounds like you got a business
idea.
Well,
of course, the framework has to include an entrepreneurial startup. And so their task is to create a highly profitable company. But it's made a little bit more difficult by the fact that the young lady, the helper of the protagonist, he learns later that she is the daughter of the Philadelphia mob boss, which strikes the FBI as interesting because they presume that, of course, the company, Demanding Damsel, is a front for the mafia's smuggling, which would be a very creative activity. And it draws also the attention of the DPSD, the French version of the FBI. So they create a bit of tension and a bit of drama. And in addition to this problem, why we've got the fact that the protagonist does not understand whether or not his helper is using him for her purposes to build a fashion company or some other purpose presumably generated by the mafia.
So in the whole buy it, run it, sell it, is the selling it going back to the mafia? Is this how it's happening? Or
I can't tell.
You got to read the book. Right?
That, but you're getting interesting now. But put a question mark behind sell it. So it's
right.
Build it, run it, sell it.
It's
the mantra of the entrepreneur: build it, run it, sell it. So that was the structure behind it.
And how did you come up? Well, you came up with the idea from your own experiences, but how did you come up with deciding to actually do it and write it?
I had too much time on my hands.
Figured it was the next project.
Well, the next project will be a spinoff from this book.
Okay, I'm gonna bring you into this for a second because this is your second book as well, correct?
I have an ebook that was How to Thrive in the New World of Work, and then this is my first more traditional book.
Okay, so Bill and Darcy, either one of you guys can answer this question: is the second one easier to write than the first one?
For me, the second one felt like the first one because the first one almost felt accidental. The first one for me was really more of taking a lot of things I had already written. I have always done a monthly newsletter. I've had a blog for many years, and taking some of those articles and linking them together in more of a tips book. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I felt like the second one, was a longer form, had to more hang together. So it almost felt like the first. So I don't think it was easier. I think it was different.
Okay.
Easier.
Easier.
The first book it was very difficult for me to imagine writing in such a way as to generate tension on every page.
Mm-hmm.
The second time around, I knew I had to do it at the front end of the process.
So you kind of created it into the outline almost.
So,
right?
Well, yes, I don't write from an outline. I can't do that. I'm not wired that way.
Yeah.
And the characters develop their own path. So sometimes controlling characters, it's difficult to do.
Yeah.
But if you understand that you want to generate tension on each page to keep that reader's interest, to keep that reader wanting to turn to see what's on the next page. So it was easier on the second pass when I understood I had to do that right from the start.
And when you're looking at what you're doing now, which is writing the book, is it important on the back end, on the selling process, or is this more of something you just want to be able to do and create and have something that you've done?
Oh, I think that writers write to sell books. And I think that the writer has to have some idea of how they're going to promote and sell the book right from day one. Now, that plan will obviously change. As I mentioned, the characters changed the book. I didn't start out to do what I did. But the promotion plan sort of wanders along with you as you're writing, and so you end up with a promotion plan at about the time the book goes to the publisher.
Gotcha. So, Bill, if you were reaching out to the audience and kind of disseminating a pearl of wisdom, what would that be?
I would suggest that entrepreneurs be mindful of their process, their building of the company process, mindful of that through the eyes of an angel investor. Angel investors in this country are very sophisticated. They, contrary to popular belief, the product or the concept of the company is not the most important feature. The most important point of the company from the view of the angel or the venture capitalist or equity management company, it's the team, of three or four imaginative A-list players passionate about their product, their service, with a vision of what the company will look like when they're completed their project, people with complementary skills. And the second most important factor is a significantly large market opportunity. It has to be scalable. You don't want to build a company that's just a one-trick pony. And so in the beginning, you need a steady stream of new customers to create profitability and a footprint that could be expanded on. And then later, you need a steady stream of new products or services to sell to your existing and new customers. So when you understand that angels think that that's important for them, for a company to have in order for them to put their money into it, then you have to admit that's probably a pretty important factor.
Good place to start, eh?
Well, start with the team. Second is the size of the market opportunity. And then the third is your product or your service.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everybody has their own views about the perceived needs and the size of it and so on. So I thought that by structuring the novel to encapsulate these what I call entrepreneurial imperatives, I thought that would be fun, weave it in, and I will be opening up a website here, buildit, runit, sellit.com, here in the next few weeks, and I will happily share this list of entrepreneurial imperatives with anyone who wants to pick them up.
So, Bill, if somebody wants to reach out and either get the book or get in contact with you, what's the best way to do that?
I'm on LinkedIn. They can find me there, or rw.bill.crossley, crossley@gmail.com.
Okay. Well, appreciate you taking some time. Well, a couple of questions for the team here, for the author team, and you guys can answer this any way you'd like. What is the biggest mistake you made in writing your book?
For me, I think the biggest mistake was not engaging enough other people earlier. Jim mentioned this earlier about having other outside readers and other people. And I have ongoing readers on my blog, and I have people who are constantly giving me ideas and feedback, and I'm out speaking on topics. But when I made the commitment to the time to do the book, I didn't work in as actively, people checking in early on. When I did that later on, I had some amazing feedback and ideas and insights from people that not only knew my work and what I was trying to say and express, but also people who had never read or heard anything from me before. And that really made me go back and change a lot of things early on that I think have made the book stronger. And again, for the next book, you know, I definitely would find what is that team that I can engage early on.
I think maybe I should have taken more time to pursue a publisher, someone who put more effort behind my book. As I said, I self-published, but I think that probably I should have at least taken more time to pursue publishers who would put you know, help me put effort in the book, help me make a better book, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the book itself, I'm really comfortable with it. But I think that would be the one area if I were to look back now and say, gee, is there something in the process I would have done a little bit differently? Maybe I would have taken time to do that, even though it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, sure. Bill, how about you?
Let me tell you that I followed Jim's plan to the extent that I did have a large number of pre-publication reviewers. I included number of very successful entrepreneurs. I had a business lawyer's accountants in Florida checking out my concept to make sure that I was legal and had woven it in properly. And I also had one of Atlanta's foremost fashionistas check me out because I was writing about something I knew absolutely nothing about, which is women's high fashion. All of my female reviewers came back to me with small comments, criticisms, edits, fixes, wonderful things. And they all concluded by telling me that they thought they were reading a chick book. Now, I didn't know what a chick book was. I've since learned. I'm not sure how in the world to promote it. I'm not sure whether it's a mistake or not. I didn't set out to do it, but if the women like it, I'm happy for them.
That's not a bad thing.
Chick lit is very hot, Bill.
Yeah, it is.
The chick lit is where it's at.
That's right. That's right. Books are designed to teach or entertain people. What did you guys learn from being the author, from going through that process, and what did you learn either about yourselves or about just writing a book in general? What was the biggest thing you learned? The
biggest thing I probably learned was about the subject I was writing, because I thought I knew a lot until I started writing the book. And then actually as I researched, I built my knowledge base significantly. And so it was a learning process for me as well, even though I was writing about something that I knew a good bit about.
Mm-hmm.
I think for me, it really is the power of the story. And even though mine is a business book, I use lots of real-life examples from people that I've worked with, from people that I've coached, and people just that I've observed. And I do have a section where we start out with saying, let me tell you a story, and explain, you know, why people are so motivated by stories. And I had somebody who read an early version of the book who all of a sudden is quoting me back to me and not remembering where he got that from. But he's like, yeah, well, you know, I heard that telling a story can really draw people in. So let me tell you the story. So if, you know, I knew that stories were important when I spoke. And I think stories are even more important when we're writing, no matter what the context is. And that is a goal for mine and more of my writing, is just to be able to illustrate more with real life stories, how this happens, what someone did, what they decided, because That's the personal interest that we all have.
Sure, sure.
My experience is the same as Jim's, I think. It was the learning process. In order to validate what I thought I knew about entrepreneurs, I listened to somewhere between 140 and 160 entrepreneurs make their pitches to angels in the last year and a half. And then I interviewed some 40 to 60 angels, met with about three super angels. Those are folks who invest at the million-dollar level, and about seven or eight regional center managers. These are the guys who facilitate green card for EB-5 investors. And what I learned was that by and large, and Jim will appreciate this, entrepreneurs tend to look at the investing angel, that they look at that as an event. They don't see it as a process that it really is. And so it was very interesting for me to realize that of those 140 to 160 entrepreneurs, actually only three of them were investor ready.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't understand the process.
Hmm. Good stuff. So we're going to wrap up today with just a last little kind of shout out. Maybe you guys could give the title of your book and then where you can get it. So Darcy, maybe start with you.
Sure. The title is Bring Your Superpowers to Work, Your Guide to More Clarity, Confidence, and Control. It's available on Amazon. There's also a page called The Book that's on Red Cape Revolution where you can find more.
Okay. Jim?
And my book is Lifespan Financial Mapping, How to Retire Secure, Even Rich. It's available at Amazon.com. It's in hardback as well as in their ebook there, the Kindle at Amazon.
Okay. And Bill?
Build It, Run It, Sell It will be on all of the principal ebook retailer sites, Kindle, Sony, Nook. And it'll also be distributed by Lightning Source to over 3,000 ebook retailers.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you guys all coming in and taking the time sharing your stories and your experiences in writing your books. We appreciate your time as listeners, and I hope your week goes well. Until next Wednesday, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.